medical community proudly presents the JDE Connection, a Quest On Air podcast production.
This podcast explores and showcases how JDE customers are harnessing specific functionality and capabilities to drive business success.
Hello, JDE Connection listeners. Welcome back. I'm Chandra Wabshaw, one of your podcast hosts, and I'm the Business Solutions Lead at Colas IS Support. With me this week, and still most weeks, is my friend and podcast partner, Paul Houtcooper, Vice President of JD Edwards Product Development at Oracle. Hey, Paul, I see or hear that you still haven't kicked your cough.
No, I haven't, unfortunately, despite everything I've been trying to do. But yeah, I even actually went back to urgent care this week trying to see if there's anything that they could do with me. They basically said, coughing's normal. Get over it. Suck it up, buttercup. And sent me home. So yes, I am dealing with this. But despite what you may hear today, it is getting better. But hey, did you look at the calendar? We are like 3 months away from Blueprint 4D. March,
already?
April, May. Yeah, it is.
Where does time go?
I know. Exactly. I don't know that I've recovered from the last conference, let alone, you know, prep for this one.
I am more recovered from in focus since I had COVID after, so.
Well, yeah, sidelined you. You had no choice but to recover. You're right.
Right.
Oh, goodness. So how have you been? You doing okay?
I'm hanging in there. Today was not the best run day for me. It just was not coming all together for me today. So I guess there will be days like these where all of a sudden your heart rate spikes up super high and you're like, I'm not moving that fast. Why is this happening? So, oh, well, I guess I'll try again for my long run next weekend.
Well, you know, my running coach always tells me to listen to my body. And yes, most recently, especially with this cough, she's been kind of in my ear about that. So hopefully today you followed your own advice and listened to your body a little bit. And maybe
I did. I cut my run short. So I did. And I even walked up the hills because I'm like, I can't have my heart rate that high right now. Clearly something is amiss today, and hopefully it's just a bad day, and I'll get back out there tomorrow and see if it's any better. So
good night's sleep can help. All right. Well, I guess we should just get right into it. You know, we've had a great conversation so far with Nathan Diamond, and today I think we're digging into how he uses AI and some AI tools to actually get even more value, I would say, out of the business analyst body of knowledge and his IIBA certification. And we find that it's a great way, I think, to reinforce some of the principles more consistently,
definitely.
Which I was just impressed at his approach. I mean, as he describes exactly how he's using AI and AI agents to, you know, enhance his implementation or application of BABIC. I mean, I was just kind of blown away. And I think, well, I'm hopeful that our listeners will learn a thing or two, because even if they're not using IIBA and BABIC in their organizations today, what Nathan is doing with AI can apply to many, many different things. Would you agree?
I would agree. And many different roles, not just a business analyst role.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like it can be applied across the board, you know, whether you're a developer, whether you are a BA, maybe you're a manager as well. I think it's very much applicable to a number of roles. So it was a great conversation, and I'm looking forward to sharing it with our listeners.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm hoping we get feedback on this one. I hope there's folks that really take what Nathan kind of lays out, outlines for you, and they go try, and they come back maybe with some of their own ideas where they've applied it. And hey, maybe they'll come on the show and share their thoughts and ideas as well. That would be really cool.
Absolutely. Or if they have a different application of what they've done, I think we'd love to hear and love to be able to share that with our users.
Absolutely.
Awesome. Well, with that, we'll turn it back over to our conversation with Nathan. Tell us a little bit about how the certification helped you in your career. What are some cool things that maybe you did with some of the knowledge you got through the BABIC?
Yeah, I felt that it was very helpful to go through the BABIC and through the certification once I had that business background. I had enough experience to be able to contextualize why things are the way they are. And so a lot of what I learned wasn't, I know all these techniques, they're like the back of my hand, or I can recite things. Like, that's not it at all. But a lot of it was, I'd be going through a chapter or a section, and it's like, oh, this is how I could have applied it in this situation, and we could have avoided this problem on this project, so on and so forth. And it was really those aha moments throughout learning it, where it's like, okay, I have a piece of knowledge and I have the experience that goes with it. Like, that's how I'm going to link it together and bring it up going forward. So then it's going to stick for me a lot better. Another way that I've been using it a lot is through AI agents, AI tools, you know, Copilot or ChatGPT, what have you. And a great example, going back to requirements, was good requirements take a lot of legwork. They take time to build. How can we speed that up? And so I created an AI agent for myself using our requirements document template as input. And so what I did is I explained to the agent, these are all the different sections of our requirements document that need to be filled out. So business requirements, stakeholder requirements, functional requirements, non-functional requirements, assumptions, constraints, dependencies, and test cases. And I said, all of these things need to be filled out in the requirements for us to consider them complete. And so then the next thing I said is, if you find a business requirement, start it with BR-1 and sequentially go through. If you find a stakeholder requirement, type in SR-1, so on and so forth, right? So everything has a label. So really, all I said is, act as if you're a business analyst in a JD Edwards environment, and gave it the definitions and how I wanted it to label things. Next, what I do is I'm going to ask a user questions based off of how I'm going to elicit to them. So if I'm talking about a certain topic, I'm going to make sure that the questions that I'm preparing before a meeting cover business requirements, stakeholder requirements, which are all the people involved. I'm making sure I'm talking to everyone. I'm asking them the same questions. What are the functional things that you're needing? What are some assumptions and constraints? So on and so forth, to essentially match what I'm giving the agent. I will record all the meetings that I have, the notes, take the transcriptions, toss all those results into the AI agent, and it will spit out a documentation template based off of all the conversation that I've had with them within those various agents and applying the Babok knowledge. So I don't have to remember all of the things that I learned. I just have to remember the core definitions that I need for my requirements. And then I really just focus on good conversation with people, really asking them what they need, being prepared in those conversations. I am asking them a complete set, but then I'm having the agent do all the work as far as building out those requirements. But I guess, long story short, without having that knowledge of the Babok, knowing how to apply those techniques when I talk with people and do elicitation, and knowing how they should be used within a requirements document, I wouldn't have known that. So you still need the knowledge. You can't simply just say, hey, do this for me in Babok version 3 standard. You still have to be able to interpret it and the results and know the meaning behind those things and really use those techniques when you're discussing topics with the business.
I love it. And I love that we brought up AI. Paul, you always ask, what conversation are we going to have that doesn't include AI? Well, true. Not this one. We got it. I love that use case. I absolutely love that. I'm blown away. That is definitely something I'm going to look into doing as well. I think that's a wonderful way to use it and keep it consistent. I feel like sometimes you come into an organization and they don't have necessarily documented processes, and things are kind of all over the place, and each little area might do it a little bit differently. And having something like this where everybody could use it, you know, you can publish it out within your, like for us, we use Copilot internally. I could publish it to everybody to use.
Yeah, that's really the secret sauce in a lot of ways. We can conduct elicitation different ways. We can have different levels of writing styles, so on and so forth. You throw it into an agent, it's all going to pop out the same. So it doesn't matter if me or business analyst A over here, or business analyst B over here writes it. It's all going to be consistent. It's going to have the same amount of information. anytime a developer reviews those requirements, they know that, okay, I'm going to have all of this consistently filled out. They don't have to wonder, well, is this including the non-functional requirements or is it not including the non-functional mm-hmm. requirements? Because I know Nathan fills these out differently than someone else. They should be able to read almost off of a consistent playbook or script
sure.
as far as what to go off on. So developers can focus on what developers like doing, which is developing.
Yeah. I mean, there's a couple things there as well. If the developer still isn't getting what they need, or if there's something where they can take it to the next level. So now they're consistently getting this level of detail in a consistent format. But if it could be tweaked in some way, they could actually then have a feedback loop where you go back to the agent and say, okay, we're going to tweak this a little bit to change the standard, and it'll apply consistently across the board to add a section for whatever it happens to be. So if you change a new standard, maybe it's an integration standard or something, there's something that you want to implement as a new standard in every solution that you do going forward, you could very easily just make that part of that template. The agent will facilitate it being integrated in, and you can continually evolve. So I think it would accelerate that. Now, one question I had is, after, you know, you've got this agent, you go through, you take your transcript, you throw it through, is there any chance that, or if you had the opportunity to then ask the agent after it generates this document, if it sees anything missing? So, you know, right. based on the standards and based on the format, did we miss anything or stuff like that? Can it make suggestions back? Does it make suggestions back where, hey, you may want to go further into the non-functional requirements of this, or here's a question that you've asked in the past that you didn't ask this time, or something like that?
Yeah, that's a great point. So I would say the answer is multifaceted. The agent that I built, I initially said, if you're talking with it, give me just the requirements. But then there's follow-up prompts that I can ask that help me do more digging as far as, okay, this seems to be a little unclear. This seems a little hazy. Mm-hmm. Let's dig into this more. There's that option. The other option too is if it gives you output and it, for example, it has no constraints. It's like, tell me anything that requires a requirement document that doesn't have constraints. So
right.
I inherently know if it doesn't give me anything or anything of quality that I didn't do my job as a VA in my elicitation skills, I wasn't asking the business the right questions. I need to go back and say, hey, how do we go about this? Right. I need to think on it more. I need to brainstorm what constraints could be out there, for example, and then I go to the business. And so, yeah, it's all very iterative in ways you can interact with it. And as you guys know, the more and more you use these tools, the more and more they learn how to meet your needs. And there's a lot of power in that.
I think what scares me and excites me at the same time. I don't know, exciting, scaring, whatever. One, you can see this facilitating the entire process. Like if it could do the requirements side, why can't you create an agent that's going to take it from there to start to do the technical side? We know we've got coding agents out there. How do you take it from this business requirements document that you've generated and transition from that to an input that allows it to, let's say, generate the code automatically, generate the test case or test scripts and do that automatically? Like this entire cycle becomes something that you could have multiple agents working together and feeding off of one another to take it where all you did was the interview and it at the end, the agent spits out a solution. Who knows? Maybe we get there. Yeah. But at the same time, understanding what we just did, somebody's going to take these interviews. Somebody's going to take this practice, you know, take all these transcripts from all these elicitations. They're going to go train an agent on how to have those conversations. And the next thing you know, you're not going to have that conversation. Somebody's just going to be speaking with an agent that's going to do this interview, this elicitation itself. And that'll be the front end of this darn thing. And you'll just be talking into whatever and say, okay, well, I have a need within the business to be able to do X, Y, Z. It'll take you through the process. And then it's, you know, again, just getting further and further consolidated, all these roles and all these tasks getting further and further consolidated. But again, we're not here to just talk about AI, but
I think to your point too, there's something that goes to where, okay, we're not at that point yet where it can be writing the code, but what is a middle ground that we can do? Maybe we can have an agent that a developer uses where you're feeding it the requirements and the developer's putting their code in there. And basically it knows how to comment out the code based off the requirements that are given and how you want things commented and the style that you do things. That in itself is helpful, right? So I think there can be these small steps and iterations throughout the process as far as how we can start leveraging these things more.
And back to what we had said earlier, sorry, Chandra, just to riff off this a little bit, it can also go the other way. So while you may have not had this upfront for everything that you've produced for your department, you still have the code and you have the resulting solution. And, you know, can you reverse engineer then that process that says, what does this code do? What does it solve? And you work your way back up the tree or the ladder or whatever you want to call it back to, hey, now we've actually got a definitive set of requirements based on the actual code itself, which is the best we can do right now, because maybe the person that had the why isn't there, but at least we can now reverse engineer and start to fill some of those gaps so we better understand the full solution that we have.
That was going to be my point, Paul. Well, if we can do it forward, why can't we do it backward too?
I think really some of the challenges that I've had with agents is the people. Let's say if I have this agent where it's building out the requirements and I want to share it with the rest of my team. If I'm not on the RACI chart of being able to tell people they have to use this tool and we have to be consistent as a team, then there's nothing saying that they have to do it. And that's been the challenge, is how do you adopt these tools and these agents to get even people to try them who don't necessarily want to do it? They don't see the need for that good business analysis work, because we have been able to get by with the way we're doing things for years. And it's still another step. And there's a little bit of, I think, anxiety around, well, if it can do this, is it going to take my job? And I need to show my value. All of these different factors that go into getting other people to use it within the organization is really challenging.
Wow. One of the comments I heard early on was, it's not that the AI agents and stuff like that are going to replace you, but it's going to be somebody working with them to enhance what they do. You know, they're doing the same thing. Business Analyst 1 and Business Analyst 2 are doing the same thing, but Business Analyst 2 has embraced this. And Business Analyst 2 is going to take Business Analyst 1's job because they're doing a better job. And that's just the reality of the situation, is that you have to embrace these tools and figure out how they're going to make you better at what you do on a daily basis. And those that do that better will be the ones that succeed. It's not so much that we're just going to flip a switch and tomorrow the computer does it all for you. Not yet, anyway.
Right. I think there's a lot that goes to when you're, for example, you have to feed this AI agent really good information, at least at this point. And you have to have those skills of asking the business why they want something. And Chandra, you probably know this just as well as I do. Sometimes you can ask the business and they tell you they want something, and then you start digging a little bit more, and then they realize that's not actually what they wanted, and there's a totally different way we should go about it. And that is very much where you need that human touch and business analysis skills still.
Yeah, to ask deeper questions, to ask different questions, to maybe tee it up a little bit differently, that I don't think right at this point in, you know, the life of AI, it's able to interpret and spin it back in a different format. I think that's where we still provide a lot of value, is being able to ask clarifying questions.
Well, and it's also based on, you know, like the reason that we have the cameras on right now, right? So we can read when, you know, when I say something stupid and I get that look from Chandra and I go, oh, we'll cut that piece. Let me know. But we read one another, and you are able to ask those follow-up questions and stuff like that based on the confidence that somebody exudes or lack of, right? And I'm sure we'll get there eventually, but right now that's not quite there. And, you know, we're still going to do a better job extracting that information.
It's not only the confidence, but it's their body language as a whole. When you look at them, arms are crossed, kind of got that snarly look on their face, right? You know when to press and when to be like, okay, so maybe they're not having the best day today. Maybe we should try asking these questions tomorrow. If you could all see this video right now, Paul's making a lot of faces at us. So yeah, all of those, Paul, that you have made are probably ones that, yes, that one as well, are ones that you kind of do tend to, maybe this isn't the best day for this type of questionnaire. And that's not something that AI can do right now. Or maybe you know then, okay, I'm going to make this more fun. I'm going to turn it a little bit. I'm going to throw an element of humor in it. I'm going to throw my dad joke in, you know, whatever it might be.
Nope, there's never a place for a good dad joke. Sorry, because there's never a good dad joke.
So. Oh, whatever.
All right.
I think a great example of that is, how many times have we all been on an email chain that has a bunch of people and it's going back and forth, and it's over and over, and then you finally get everyone to meet and it's like a 15-minute discussion and it's over.
Yes.
And it's over. Oh. Yep.
Sometimes a call is just so much easier. We can just get to the bottom of it.
I don't know how many times I'm like, stop trying to do this over email and pick up the phone. Just pick up the phone. Do a soft handoff. I want it like right here. I want the whatever it happens to be.
That was a really great conversation with Nathan. I really enjoyed hearing how he used AI to transform his business analyst requirements documentation phase of his projects. That was awesome. Super exciting to hear of a way where he brought together his knowledge from Babok and AI and has helped his organization transform and standardize a process.
Absolutely. It's just so impressive. And it makes so much sense when you hear him kind of lay out exactly how he's used this. If any of you out there have been, I mean, I'm sure a lot of folks out there have played around with these AI tools and whatnot. And I'm hoping that, you know, it resonates with you as he was describing that. It made so much sense. And, you know, I saw other applications. Like, you don't have to apply it to Babak and what he was talking about, but maybe if your organization has its own processes and procedures, its own standards that they've actually documented, but you want a way of, let's say, reinforcing that discipline, you can see where this comes in. And I can see application to, you know, we've got standards around coding, right? We've got a ton of coding standards on, you know, whether it's how we comment the code, whether it's how we space the code, some of the syntax that we use. There's specific things in the developer world around servers and whatnot that you want to cross-check. And you could just see how you could use these tools as a code reviewer to reinforce that and not have to rely on peer reviews to necessarily be your way of making sure that nothing gets missed, so to speak, and that there's a level of consistency. So just an example, I suppose. But as we were talking, you and I have had a couple sessions now on AI, and it's come up in many of our episodes and interviews with folks. But would you be out there right now encouraging folks to just jump all in, or a more conservative approach, or hey, not at all? I mean, where are you at right now with AI?
I'm anti-AI. Just kidding. No, you know, I've embraced it over the years, but I've started small. For me, I kind of look at it the same way you might approach any sort of transformation. For me, I'm a little bit more conservative. I'm not a jump all in and whoop, everything's going to go here. I'm going to test the waters out a little. For me, I really started with, maybe I was running into a brain lapse on how I wanted to word something. So I might spin that through either chat or Copilot to help me when you get that writer's block occasionally.
Yeah, yeah.
Or I've used it where I need to tone down an email. I've been fired up and I've just typed something out in response. And I'm like, ooh, I really don't want to send this. This is really not how I feel. I know I'm upset. I need something to tone it down, right?
Oh, I just click send. I mean, I don't know. Actually, what I learned was I type out those emails and then I hit delete and I just never send them. But now what I can do is I can type them out and I can hand them over to, like you say, Copilot or chat or whatever. And I could say, could you add empathy to the following? So I get to at least voice my frustration, you know, that this twat waffle didn't blah, 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 or whatever. But AI does a very good job of applying emotional intelligence and empathy. And next thing you know, it softens my tone and I sound all neat and professional, even though behind the keyboard, I'm like smashing this thing and want to put my fist through the screen. But anyway, enough about that. But yes, I could see that application too. Go ahead.
Right. Where when you say that it applies emotional intelligence, it's limited. It still doesn't know your audience. Right. So I think we still need a personal touch within it. So even though I might throw something through it, I still read through it and make sure that it sounds, number one, like something I would send, not something that seems really off the wall. Because I think that's important too, that it people don't meet you and be like, you don't talk at all like how you write. What's the deal?
Right.
Oh, that's because I write everything through chat, you know?
Right. You still need to maintain your voice. And I think you and I were having a chat on the side about, is this an assistant? Is it a enhancement to what you do? Is it a compliment to what you do? An accelerant to what you want to do? Whatever. Or should people be trying to use it as a cheat code? And that's where I get, I guess my anxiety goes up, is when I hear people trying to use it as a shortcut, as a cheat, like they're not going to apply their brain. And instead it's just, I'll just let chat take care of that for me. And it's like, no, see, that's not the answer. You should, you know, I've seen too many things come out of this, that especially with hallucinations, or to your point about writing, it totally loses the audience, or it totally loses your voice, and you would never see those things. I mean, I don't want to get too far on a tangent, and we got to get to our Midwesternism today, but I had a example of this week where, again, as we try to incorporate AI into our daily lives and have it improve what we do, I happen to be on a webcast and I'm listening in, and everybody within the webcast, they were trying to do it as you and I would do a podcast. They were trying to do this back and forth Q&A, all casual, relaxed. But every single question was scripted and every single response was scripted, and you could tell that they had used AI to do it. And everybody was effectively reading their responses from AI. And what was so funny about it was the AI videos that they have out there would do a better job of applying the human touch than what these four or five people were doing on this webcast. And I was like, you're not supposed to convert yourself to, like, you're going the wrong way, folks. I mean, they got very monotone. They got very stiff. There was just, I mean, but every single word was perfect. Every single sentence was perfect. So they didn't say anything wrong. They used all of these embellishments that, you know, in day-to-day conversation they would never use. And they nothing like that. They sounded absolutely amazing from that sense, just like if you read it to yourself. But when you watch that on screen and you sign into a webcast and you see that, I cringe. Because I'm like, to me, that's just, you just handed it over. I mean, at this point, why don't you just have them generate an AI version of yourself and go all monotone on us? Because it's not you. You're not the one speaking. It was an AI script. You may as well make an AI video at that point. But anyway, I digress. So
I think, well, in, I wanted to circle back. I don't want people to think I'm only using this just for email. For me, I've started with smaller problems. Maybe I need some assistance in scripting. I'm not a programmer, so if I am doing something and I need some scripting, I have turned to it for help on scripting. It has helped me learn, which is pretty cool. I am interested in doing similar to what Nathan has done with requirements and getting some standards in place in my organization. I think test case generation, your test scripts would be a really good, here's my requirements now, please help me generate test scripts. Nothing where I'd say I'm automating the entire process at this point. I'm not quite ready for that. And for me, there's something still about having business judgment that I don't think the AI or the AI agents have at this point. And I'm concerned about, this is still probably the recovering accountant in me, data privacy, traceability, accountability. When I'm dealing with a financial system that has very sensitive information in it, I'm not just turning that over. And I don't think it's smart.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. I agree 100%. I mean, there's always got to be a human in the loop at this point. You can't make it completely autonomous. We're not there. And regardless of your implementation, you've got to be conscious of the information that you're feeding it and the controls that you're getting. And just most recently, there have been some, I'd say, advancements in agents. And
yes,
you know, they're now able to do some level of tasks autonomously for you personally, if you're willing to give them access to your calendar, to your email, to certain things.
Bank accounts too.
Right. Yeah, I mean, you know, go book me something on XYZ, right? Go book me a flight to whatever. Go book me a hotel. That's pretty scary once those things have access to your credit cards and some of your accounts. That's a pretty scary position to be in at this point. So, I mean, things are moving fast. The application of these things continues to evolve at a rate that's really difficult to keep up with, but you still have all these security concerns as well. So I heard it the other day on another podcast. It was like, we're all in, but you got to stay safe out there. So we're all in on AI, but stay safe. You got to stay safe. So with that, what is our Midwesternism of the day this week? What did you come up with?
Well, I came up with an appetizer because, well, it's Super Bowl Sunday coming up.
Ah, yeah.
And I figured we should talk about a Midwestern Super Bowl appetizer.
Mm-hmm.
So the one I came up with is called Hanky Pankies.
Oh, gosh. Wasn't that a game? I don't even want to know. Anyway, first of all, where did you get this?
So I got this from one of my running friends. She texted me the other day and she's like, hey, I know the Super Bowl's coming up. Not sure if you have these two on your list of Midwesternisms, but they're Super Bowl advertisers that are very popular with my boyfriend.
Oh, wow. Okay. And boyfriend's from?
Ohio. He's okay. From Ohio. Okay. He's from the Midwest, right. I think.
Okay.
So I thought it was hilarious. I'm like, one of them, I was like, I think I know what this one is, but I'm not sure how it's Midwestern. So we'll talk about that one next week. But the Hanky Pankies, it took me a hot second to remember what they were. I actually did have to Google it. I was like, I should know what these are.
Yeah.
And I do. They gained popularity in the 70s and 80s, obviously served at card parties, because that's a popular thing in the Midwest. Right. Holidays, football game day gatherings, of course, which Super Bowl would be one of those. But they are a savory mixture of ground beef, pork sausage, melted Velveeta cheese.
Ooh.
Yeah, with maybe a little bit of oregano, garlic salt, a dash of Worcestershire sauce, my favorite word to say, or maybe even some red pepper flakes if you're a really crazy Midwestern that likes to spice it up a little.
Remember, black pepper is a spice in the Midwest. When you start talking with red pepper flakes, you're talking crazy talk.
I know, right? And all of that is served on a small toasted cocktail rye or pumpernickel bread.
Very nice.
Yes.
I mean, anything with Velveeta has, you had me at Velveeta, let's put it that way. So
I did.
It's not real cheese. I get it. I don't care. It's amazeballs. All right. Anything with Velveeta is fantastic. Now, if you could have put Spam in there on top of it, oh my God, I might have passed out.
Good to know.
See, I grew up on mac and cheese and Spam. So, I mean, I just, you know, so that's where that comes from. But this sounds awesome.
I don't know that I've actually ever had Spam, which is funny because I grew up probably in about an hour from where Hormel is, the processing plants that make Spam. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. There's a Spam museum down there. You know, you should try touring sometime. Is.
I know. Can you believe, of all things, I lived in Minnesota for over 40 years and I have never been there.
That's crazy. That's a shame. Put it on our list of whatever you want to call it.
The Midwestern tour list.
Yeah, the Midwestern tour list. That's right. That's
absolutely
awesome.
All right. For questions, feedback, or ideas for future episodes, contact us at thejdeconnection@questoraclecommunity.org. Until next time, let's keep learning, sharing, and most importantly, laughing together. Toodles!
See ya! Thank you for tuning in for today's episode of the JDE Connection, a Quest On Air podcast production. Show notes and links can be found at questoraclecommunity.org/JDE Connection.
To learn more about what's happening in the Quest JD Edwards community, visit our website at questoraclecommunity.org/JD Edwards.